welcome back to the TFT podcast, Theory for Turntables. I'm Ryan. That's Matt. Matt, of all the Matt Rathers in the world, you're the Matt Ratheriest.
I'm just not feeling Christmas this year, Ryan. I know it's Christmas time. I'm just not feeling it.
Well, I have one thing to say to you. Swiggity swooty, I'm feeling on that booty on my sleigh to steal your girl. Hey guys, we're doing Christmas albums. Not one, not two, but three Christmas albums.
The holiday's so nice we ruined it thrice.
Thrice, exactly. Actually, we are not, you know, if we had just discussed Diplo's A Very, Very Decent Christmas, Dianu. If we had just discussed the Los Campesinos Christmas EP, Dianu. But we're also doing those and Mark Kozelek Strings Christmas Carols because we're gluttons for punishment and we can't leave well enough alone. You know, it's like that, you know, you're with your family at Christmas and you could pick a fight or not pick the fight, and you pick that fight, and we're picking that fight today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Chris Kringle. I'm surprised this one didn't have the off album track "Chris Kringle Can Suck My Cock."
Right. It's like picking a fight with your conservative uncle at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I think that's exactly.
How's that Obama? How's your guy doing now? Huh?
Yeah. So no, we have the whole indie family here for Christmas celebration, right? We have your combative uncle. You have your punk cousin and your twerking younger sibling,
right?
And they're all here.
They're all insufferable, right? Like, and it's actually interesting. I mean, but no joke. Before we were talking about, we were recording, we were talking about what we wanted to talk about, and I think you suggested a typology of bad Christmas music, and that's very interesting to me. So, listen, here's what we're gonna do.
Oh yes, tell me, the host of this episode, what we are going to do.
Here's what we're going to do.
Tell me, Matt.
We're going to put links to the very decent, very, very decent Christmas playlist, which you can get on SoundCloud in the show notes, and then a separate link.
It can be purchased on iTunes, too, if you listen through and say, this is something I need to burn $5 on.
Yeah. And burn to a CD to carry around in your, you know,
which you can then burn to a cassette tape.
Right. And then also embed a playlist that is the Los Campesinos and the Mark Kozelek Christmas albums, so that you can listen to those.
We'll see you in about 2 hours.
Yeah, two or three. Like the Diplo Christmas remix and the Los Campesinos album are both pretty short. Mark Kozelek, as you would expect, is insufferably long. So yeah, we'll see you.
Crack open some nog, and we'll see you after this message from our sponsors.
Absolutely. Are you not feeling good this Christmas?
I'm feeling ill at ease, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, here's what you need. Heroin and cocaine and
whoa, are you saying that I mix uppers and downers?
That's right, it's a Christmas speedball, just like your funny uncle pours a little bit of hooch into the eggnog. You can mix the uppers and downers for a very special experience, and it might just make your family bearable over Christmas.
Well, you know, I'm waiting for the mood to drop, but I think the beat's going to drop first.
Yeah, absolutely. You hang the balls on the tree, and you speed the balls in your veins. Merry Christmas.
And we're back.
Yes.
Huh. Yeah, drugs, huh?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I figured it was a year end. We've done three fake sponsors for drugs. And,
you know, do we listen to any advertisements? Because, like, you know, the proportion of our fake ads with that start with "Do you blank" versus the actual number of ads that are constructed in that way. Like, I guess what we should do is we should say which ad experience would you prefer? because like it's weird that we are harkening back to some older imaginary age of radio advertising as opposed to the kinds of advertising we usually engage with, such as ads on Hulu and ads for Squarespace on podcasts or MailChimp.
Yeah, but there is that sort of like very, very basic problem solution. Ads, but it's relegated to like late night infomercials and stuff like that. So I think we're calling out our slight unease having gone commercial and advertising drugs as much as we do in order to,
interesting point is that we're basically doing pharmaceutical advertising just for self-medication.
Right, exactly. Except, like, unlike late-night CNN, like late-night cable news or late-night infomercials, we're advertising drugs at young people. So they're recreational drugs rather than, like, vital life-extending drugs.
Look, you can take any of these drugs and sit in a bathtub. Like, two adjacent bathtubs on the beach.
You know who I wish would stop taking his life-extending drugs is Mark Kozelek.
Yeah, so I guess you want to start there?
Well, I want to start there. There's a reason I want to start there. Like, a couple reasons. One is to dispense with it quickly. The other is that, like, I think it provides the greatest bridge from, and I mean, look, I'm thinking about things like this, from the Bright Eyes Christmas special last year. Because of the records, it's the most like.
Because you also hated it.
It's the Bright Eyes. It's the most Bright Eyesiest, right? Of the ones that we're considering, right? And he still manages to like talk in an affected way. You know, for whatever reason, like this is the least for real, right? Of any of the three records that we're considering, because I have a feeling that a lot of what's going on this record is sort of a pose. And I want to talk about bad Christmas music, right? Because why not just listen to Bing Crosby all the time, right? Bing Crosby is great. Why do we need new Christmas music? Why do we need new bad interpretations of these songs, right? If it's your church group, right, or your kid's elementary school, or your, you know, family sing-along around the piano, then there's something else going on. You're not going to it for the musical quality. You're going to it for a sense of tradition, a sense of belonging, a sense of continuity, a sense of, you know, exuberance and, you know, cheer and a certain amount of charm, right? But without any of those things, you know, why are we listening to bad Christmas music? And by bad...
But I think you're starting to put a theory. What is a theory of good Christmas music? And I think it's there. Like, you know, you enumerated, I think, the things that you the normative components of good Christmas music. But I mean, I want to play devil's advocate here a little bit. That's very Christmas industrial complex normative of you. You know, maybe Christmas is fraught with anxiety and stress and regret, as well as redemption and reflection and many other feelings. And so maybe good Christmas music is something else. And is pulling back the wool from our eyes, right? That has been already pulled over by the cheery Christmas music that has been pumping since you know, Halloween, or Easter, or the, you know, the you know, increasingly encroaching 365 days of commercial Christmas.
Yeah. But I think that, like, there actually is, I don't know, I think that melancholy is part of the season. Like, one of mm-hmm. the things that I'm, one of the things that I think Mark Kozelek's Christmas album actually does manage to capture, and really pinpoint pretty accurately, is the dichotomy between Christmas as an event, as a ritual, as a celebration, as a day, as a, you know, a thing that happens, and Christmas as sort of a state of mind that you are supposed to attain, right? Christmas as a kind of individual disposition of your soul that, that you can't help but fall short of, because the there's always more joy. You know what I mean? It's almost baked into the definition that you're not in the spirit enough. You know, and that if you're, even if you're conceiving of it in that sense, you're not in the spirit enough, right? And I think that that has, you know, I don't know, that has sort of noble roots, like not the least of which is the Charlie Brown Christmas that the first track on the Mark Kozelek Christmas album comes from, right? Like that, and he sort of, he even does the Linus and Charlie Brown
right.
Dialogue in the bridge of that. But substituting his own name in there, like, I'm Christmas, it's Christmas time, I'm just not feeling it. Oh, Mark Kozelek, you're the Mark Kozelekiest of them all, you know. And War on Drugs.
And it's like, it makes you think that, like, Charlie Brown is really punk as fuck, right? Like,
yeah.
in the episode, right? Everyone's selling out. His sister is selling out. Snoopy is selling out. They have the horrible dystopian, you know, tinsel trees. And he's like, you know, no, man, I remember when it was about the Jesus.
Right. Or that, like, I remember when it was about being, I remember when it was about remembering that it was about something, you know what I mean? Like, I remember when it was about, like, an unearned nostalgia and a sense of bitter self-recrimination at how far you've fallen from the, you know, great traditions your parents wanted you to live up to. Yeah, it's so, it's so interesting that, and I think that, like, a lot of Christmas music is about, that dichotomy, right? Like, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful, right? Sets up a dichotomy of, like, ice and fire, of outside and inside, and it's almost sort of dares the elements to, you know, try to ruin your Christmas, right? Like, try to, you know, impinge on our celebration. Baby, It's Cold Outside is another one that does the same thing, sort of the cold outside, and the warmth, though kind of unwanted, right? Unwanted warmth on the inside, you know, but have yourself a merry little Christmas, or I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, especially, right? The, speaking of Bing Crosby, you know, I think that, by the way, I think White Christmas is on Netflix, and, you know, is well worth a watch if you want something to put in the background while you're wrapping presents or something like that. And he sings, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, and he sings it. I mean, the thing about White Christmas is he sings it, in the army during war, right? He's deployed in Europe. He's singing White Christmas, during the war. And the idea is that it's not a white Christmas, right? Like, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas just like the ones I used to know,
right?
You know,
or I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams, right?
Yeah, that's so that idea, like, you know, last year's title was Christmas is always already ruined, and I think we can sort of see why, you know. But so it's not the melancholy, it's not the, like, it's not the cheeriness, right? It's not the kind of forced happiness, and that's not the sort of thing of authentic Christmas music. When I say that it's bad Christmas music, I mean, like, technically bad. I mean that it's not on pitch. I mean that there are rhythmic awkwardnesses, right? And, like, I think that these things, I think that Mark Kozelek is capable of singing better than he does, you know? And it's not, you know, so rather than, like, rather than it's being, you know, Christmas normative, I would say that my theory of bad, Christmas music needs to have recourse to a normative discourse of good music in general, right? And that, like, you know, but it's an authenticity discourse that I'm talking about, right? Like making music as well as you can under the circumstances that you're under. That's, you know, that's all I ask.
You want a virtue ethics, right? That you want, like Mark Kozelek to be being, I mean, you, well, I mean, this is an interesting question, right? Is it that, like, cause like Mark Kozelek is being the Mark Kozelekiest Mark Kozelek, right? Which, like, entails, like, in fact, like, you know, shooting himself in the foot, or, you know, as it were, you know, burning the trash with the aerosol can inside. And because I think that there's an interesting dichotomy here is that, I mean, I guess as someone who, as my grandfather was fond of saying, could not carry a tune in a bucket, like, you know, like, in some ways, the melodic pieces and being, you know, being in tune, being on pitch, like, I have vague senses of this, but it's not necessarily what I value in music. And I think what's striking about Kozelek's music, we talked about this a little bit when we talked about Benji 2 weeks ago, is that his, you know, while vile things can come out of his mouth, both in terms of what they mean, and I'm led to believe how they sound in terms of singing, his hands do great work. He's a great guitar player, and the arrangements are generally really interesting, right? That there's and this carries over to Benji as well, and we only kind of touched on this a little bit, but on Sings Christmas Carols, I really liked the kind of Spanish influenced guitar styling. And I guess because, you know, I am musical, but I'm a percussionist, and we've talked about this before, that rhythm is my is the way that I approach all music. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways in which the guitar is played very percussively here, and it's almost like a six-stringed xylophone, which creates a lot of there's almost a you know, Yuletide pointillism that's going on here, both in, like, at the level of individual songs, of it's being kind of you know, cobbled together of these individual sonic moments, and then in the construction of the album, which is a mix of you know, and when you were talking about kind of Christmas classics and kind of what some of what goes on thematically, it was interesting to me that you hit the secular songs, because a good chunk of the songs on this, I would hazard to guess a majority are religious songs, right? Are religious standards, O Come All Ye Faithful, Away in a Manger, A Little Town of Bethlehem, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, Silent Night, The First Noel, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, What Child Is This, right? So we're, Do You Hear What I Hear? So it's like a majority religious songs, but there's these, like, little glimpses of Christmas, and I think that from a rhythmic standpoint, there is something good there, and from a kind of cohesion of tone, right? It's not for, I mean, in some ways, what I was thinking about when I was thinking about all three of these albums is, like, what kind of Christmas event do you play this for?
Sure.
Right. And or, like, what kind of Christmas party, what kind of gathering, or part of the season is this appropriate for? And I feel like, I mean, there have been times, I think even, like, when visiting, you know, one thing that happens you know, during Christmas is visiting family. And I feel like there have been times where I've been in my childhood home and my parents are like at work. I've been home alone. It gets dark early and I've been at home alone, you know, and it's gotten dark and I'm like, should I, and I'm turning on the like Christmas tree lights or turning on some lights in a dimly lit dark house alone in the Christmas time. And this is a really good album for that Christmas melancholy.
You're music supervising the film of the indie film of your own Christmas, right?
Yeah, and it's great for that because you don't want it to be good because it's not, because there is, like, I think that also in some ways we in this concept of Christmas ruining, there's a sense of there's an ideal Christmas. There's a Christmas of either your memory of your childhood or of your parents' memory and of the collective memory of fantastical Norman Rockwell painting that doesn't exist and never existed. But it's there, and there's this desire for Christmas to be perfection and kind of chasing that, like sort of like you're saying, as this, you know, state of mind or a state of Christmas nirvana. And that the imperfections in some ways really get at the gap between the Christmas as experienced as each subsequent year and the Christmas in your mind and this kind of perfect Christmas. And so I think there's something in kind of I think that there's something good about the badness of that. But that, I guess getting back to that is, it is this, with Kozelek, and we talked about this on the Benji episode, that there is this, Hall of Mirrors aspect about, and we've talked about this a few different times throughout the last year, about these authenticity claims and the very artificial authenticity of like, I'm so real because I'm so bad. And you feel like the badness is a put on, and I think that, and in some ways, and I feel like that's, I'm emerging as our resident Kozelek apologist.
This whole podcast reeks of Sunk Hill Moon apologism,
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. yeah. And so I'll play that role
So what I'm saying is that if Benji is bad, how can Mark Kozelek sing's Christmas carols be good?
Yeah, I mean, I see.
Right? If it's wrong to steal one record from the Waffles, why is it less wrong to steal the other record from the Waffles? That's what I'm asking. No, I mean, okay, yes. My question is how honestly is it come by, though, the badness, right? Like, if you had a kid, if your kids, like, made a cassette tape recording of themselves playing and singing Christmas carols, and the singing was not, the quality of, like, Audra McDonald singing at the Met or something like that. Well, I don't know. Audra McDonald doesn't really sing at the Met. Singing at Carnegie Hall, right? Like, that you wouldn't ask of it that, and it would be the imperfections, right? Like the lapses in technique or the, not being something that you'd want to record, and sell for $12, right? Like that would not make a damn bit of difference. And in that case, like the imperfections would be, part of the authenticity of the thing. But how authentically, if you're that good a guitar player, like, why are you that bad a singer? Why not go get a specialist in violence, right? Like, you have specialists in violins, for your Spanish style guitar music. Like, why not have specialists in singing on your Christmas record, and why, like, if you are a rhythmic, if you are sort of rhythmically literate, why so many lapses into awkwardness in the delivery of these things, right? Like, there's in Hark the Herald Angels Sing, there's a great line, which is, hail the incarnate deity. Hail the Incarnate, and it's elided, right? Because the thing is da ba 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 ba, so it's written th apostrophe incarnate. Hail the Incarnate Deity. And if you want to, you can, you know, if you don't do elision like that, you can just make them eighth notes, right? Like, Hail the Incarnate Deity. You know what Mark Kozelek sings? Hail the Incarnate Deity. Right, it doesn't make any sense. It's stupid for the sake of being stupid. Hey man,
this world doesn't make any sense. All right, you know it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, your cousin, like just blowing up in a trash fire. Panera doesn't make any sense.
You don't.
I'm really happy actually that Pitchfork in its year end review, or it's like, you know, its year end review list that put Benji in the top 10. I think it was like 7 or 8. Talked about Panera, so I'm glad that like my fixation on his multiple Panera references is something else that was noticed, and is at least part of the norm coreness of Kozelek.
That's why you know what? Yes, that's what I object to, right? It's normcore Christmas, not normal Christmas. You know, normal Christmas with all of its disappointments. Normal Christmas with all of its insufficiencies and with its many kinds of melancholy and nostalgia. You know, normcore Christmas is just like putting on a fleece, right?
Well, it's like it's a case where it's like it's a part.
You know what? Normcore Christmas is a shitty Christmas sweater party, well, right?
Exactly.
Normal Christmas is the shitty Christmas sweater that your grandmother made for you. You know,
or you know what? Normal Christmas is putting on a nice sweater that is, you know, either a nice hue of red or is camel colored.
Right.
That's normal Christmas. Uh-huh. Well, I think that it's, you know, with the mainstreaming of ugly Christmas sweaters, that in some ways Christmas was actually normcored before a lot of other parts of pop culture, right? So that it was like kind of the
normcore before it was cool.
Yeah, exactly. That Christmas was like the canary in the normcore coal mine, and that there was definitely a little more of that, you know, kind of bridging.
I thought that work boots were probably the canary, and the flannel shirts were the canary in the
flannel. Normcore. Yeah, I guess so.
dressing like a miner was the canary in the normcore coal mine.
Yeah, it's hard to say though, but I feel like a lot of this Christmas stuff is a big place of it, because. Why? Because of overall the ubiquity of it in pop culture, right? That it is, you know, a good month and a half of every year, right? You know, a bit more than 1/12 of every year is given over to Christmas, and you know, regardless of whether you celebrate Christmas or not, whether you're religious or not, whether you're Christian or not, that it is there, and so there are a. And so there's like these just many, many layers of irony and post irony that are bound up in Christmas, and a lot of the kind of emotion and anxiety and whatever that we've talked about. And so I think that there is a lot of kind of norm coring of Christmas. I mean, and I think part of that is, you know, when we're talking about why one wants this, I mean, it is interesting. I think another question to ask is, why are indie artists making Christmas albums? I guess part of the answer is, well, you know, some idiot on the internet's going to talk about it, so guilty. We're part of the problem. because there was one Bright Eyes Christmas album, and we talked about it, and now there are three Christmas albums, and we're in a real, like, Sorcerer's Apprentice situation here. That next year there will be like 48 Christmas albums, like, and we'll be talking about like Run the Jewels Christmas, and Tuve Lu's like Stay High with Saint Nick, and we'll and and um the Pretty Reckless Christmas album, which I like, you know, straight to hell with Santa. I actually make it a wish list. I want most of these things to exist.
Spinal Tap made that already. It's called Christmas with the Devil, and is a good novelty record. Is well worth a listen. I'll link.
So here's the thing. I have a statement I'd like to make. All Christmas music is novelty music.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that seems to be the case, right? That seems self-evident.
I didn't think you'd roll over so quickly on that one.
Well, okay, hold on. Okay, what about like religious Christmas music? Is it also novelty music?
For the sake of this argument, I will say yes.
I mean, I suppose it is novel because you only sing it once a year, right? Like,
I mean, right?
Churches are programmed so that it's like any radio format, right? If the rotation gets too tight, you lose your audience. So you have to space out the real hits so that they can so that you string them along, right? And so like you only get O Come, O Come, Emmanuel 4 weeks out of the year, you know. You only get Adeste Fideles for, Christmas in the octave. Sure, it's novel. I mean, it's novel in that sense. I would say, though, that and it's novelty music in the sense that novelty music is music directed at other aims besides those we normally associate with music, right? Like comedy novelty music is there to make you laugh, you know?
Right.
Religious
novelty music is there to make you reflect on like the meaning of the holiday, right? And specifically to fixate your attention on
say them prayers fast, fuck the slow mo.
Exactly. Gesture to everything that Killer Mike and LP say about religion.
hold up the gun and the fist holding the crucifix in here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hold up your wafer and your wine goblet. Yeah, exactly. Oh no, but I mean, right? It's fixating you on the various elements of the Christmas story, right? And it's actually, I mean, Christmas music is really interesting that way. And thinking about the liturgy of we've not really ever talked about this. So I was raised United Methodist, and so I don't know how much the Christmas liturgy. I've not celebrated Christmas really in any other denomination, so I don't know what kind of cross denominational religious liturgies look like. But there's definitely, you know, in the United Methodist liturgy, there's a pretty good sequencing of scripture and specific songs, right, that kind of go in at certain points in the story. And it's basically the liturgy is composed as basically musical theater, it's basically cabaret but with Jesus.
I think that's right. I think it is musical theater or sort of ritual, you know, ritual performance, right? And we've sort of talked about aspects of ritual performance in indie rock or in hip hop. Right. Like we talked a little bit about ritual performance in the Run the Jewels episode, actually, right? Like, mm-hmm. And sort of various kinds of enactments, various kinds of call and response, right? Assuming certain postures, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Singing along with certain things, like expressing exuberance, mm-hmm. at certain times in the course of the Run the Jewels liturgy. This is something that's akin to that, I think. So yeah, I mean, I sort of noticed that the Kozelek record had a lot of the religious songs, and one thing I'll give it, right, is that it didn't underline that aspect of it, right? It didn't either set it in quotes or call attention to to that aspect. They were kind of presented in a straightforward way, shitty singing and all, for what they were. And you know what I mean? It wasn't like the singing was any shittier on that or the Charlie Brown Christmas song, you know?
Right. Whereas on the Bright Eyes Christmas album, it felt like any of the religious songs that were there were much more in quotes, right? And they were more sung ironically.
Sure.
Or obviously ironically.
I tried actually, you know, here's another one. I tried while we were doing some like Christmas tree decorating to turn on Sufjan Stevens' several like Magnum Christmas opuses. It just did not. It didn't take. Man, it was rough. Those were hard to get through.
That's the thing, right? So that's kind of one of the baselines against which, like, I'm kind of viewing the Kozeluk record.
Indie Christmas. Yeah, it's better. Well, it's easier listening than that, right? And it's more technically proficient than the Bright Eyes album. But I think it has the same fundamental problem of conception that the Bright Eyes album has, you know, which is that, like, I don't understand other than do a Christmas album in my style, right? Like, I don't understand what the artistic impulse is, right? Like, because that's an exercise in question begging. What is my style and why is it valuable? And you end up doing a kind of burlesque of your own self, you know, you end up doing kind of a burlesque of your own style, and it becomes sort of campy in the
right, because your style is not doing Christmas songs.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be awesome to have a Christmas band and just a band that plays Christmas music.
Wasn't it Mannheim Steamroller?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess. No, but they have other, I mean, I think they were.
They did other things.
That's a really interesting
well.
Question. But they are one of the closest things in recent memory. And you know what? This is, I think, as good of a pivot point as we're going to get, right? Because
To Diplo. Let me just drop in because we might not have time for Los Campesinos. Let me just drop in one observation on Los Campesinos. If the interesting thing about the Kozeluk record was the presence of all the religious songs, the interesting thing about the Los Campesinos record to me is all the Anglo stuff, right? And I guess Los Campesinos are like notionally a Welsh band or formed in Wales, though none of its members are Welsh, right? It was interesting to
they're
me.
They're a
like,
UK band, so yeah. It felt like UK Christmas.
Yeah, sure. Like that, it had this.
Let's
like,
stay on that. Let's stay on this for a little bit. We'll pivot to the Mad
to Diplo, right? Like, yeah. There's this thing that I sort of like of these like these Anglo Christmas songs, and that you don't get so much in the. You don't get so much for in the U.S. Christmas industrial complex, you know.
Tell me a little more about that, because I'm actually not familiar with that tradition very much, and with like UK Christmas tradition. I've seen a couple of Christmas specials, so I know that there's something different.
I'm not sure that I know a ton about like UK Christmas traditions, except as they. You know, except as they extend to Downton Abbey, but the or now Doctor Who. Now that I watch that as well, I'm hoping there's a Black Mirror Christmas special.
Oh, there is.
Oh, really?
It stars John Hamm.
Oh, nice! Can't wait.
Yeah, I think it aired. It has aired.
Has it?
I presume it is on the Waffles.
I got to check that on the Waffles because it wasn't on Netflix. You know, the songs like the very Anglo sort of old madrigals, you know, ye oldie stuff. And on the Los Campesinos record, it's the Holly and the Ivy. Or if you think of like Good King Wenceslas, you know, stuff that references a sort of English experience or like English points of history and cultural reference, or the, you know, that sort of tradition of song, that like, you know, great tradition of white people music, you know, virgin territory, untouched by any thieving of pop culture from the African tradition, you know. Good old, right, like good old boring, insufferable white people music.
Well, then, I mean, I guess, as you call it Anglo and you kind of talk about, like, I mean, and you, there are some elements, you're a few steps away from just kind of talking about pagan traditions as well, right?
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like Celtic specifically, is it, right? Like, I was listening, because apparently I get all my cultural news from listening to Morning Edition most days, from NPR. I was listening to Morning Edition over the weekend, and there was an Irish Christmas record thing that was, you know, that was sort of Irish, traditional Irish music or Celtic music or, you know, or what have you, so, that has its roots in a still older tradition than the kind of, you know, post-Renaissance Anglo music that I'm thinking about. And that, you know, I love that stuff. I mean, on my contention that all folk musics are superior to all art musics, right? Like, I really enjoy listening to that stuff, though a lot of it becomes sort of ersatz, like hoi-to-toi-to-toi, you know, tourist music. If you can find your way, you know, out of the kind of the, if you can find your way out of the, whatever the analog of like Nashville commercial country is and into the analog of traditional American folk music, right, into the traditional Irish folk music, I think there's great stuff in there. And by the way, Celtic music is not just Irish. There's, you know, the Celtic musical tradition is like on the Iberian Peninsula and it's on, you know, it's all over. There was a great sort of kind of Celtic waves of migration and stuff. So that's, you know, that stuff is cool also, but it's post-Christian, right? It's not pagan. It's a much earlier, it's a sort of Middle Ages Christianity, but it is also still Christian music.
Although I think what I want to kind of zoom in on here, on this album, right, is it's striking in that it is, I mean, to my knowledge, and maybe I'm missing, you know, there is a musical tradition of which I'm ignorant, but that largely, right, that these are original conception of the cover of Lonely This Christmas that was a previous, that I'm given to understand is a previous UK glam rock Christmas song from the 70s by a band called Mud. But the other songs are not standards. They're neither religious nor secular standards. And especially, and I guess what kind of cued certain kind of pagan elements beyond the musicality is, you know, the references to more general winter and the natural world, right? A dode to a deer, the holly and the ivy, kindling flames. And even though there are relations to kind of, you know, Christmas ideas, they're also general winter ideas. And there's kind of mixing of some of the elements that, you know, I understand as of Christmas rituals that have roots in pagan rituals feel here, right? So that there seems to be, you know, this almost could be the Los Campesinos Winter Solstice album.
Sure.
And I feel that is there. And yet it's like, so it's situating a, you know, the season and both the commercial elements of the season, and they kind of talk about, you know, especially the first track, When Christmas Comes, right? It feels very like commercial Christmas, right? And they talk about, you know, LED avenues and jingle bells all around. And the others are kind of talk about, on Holly and the Ivy kind of situate, you know, Mary and Jesus within, like, for me, it evokes like a kind of wintry forest or something like that. But
sure.
it places, you know, this, you know, Mediterranean manger birth in like a chilly, frosty northern, you know, winter setting, right?
And then the cover of the album is a snow globe, right?
Exactly.
It's this sort of cottage, little sort of lonely looking cottage on a snowbank, right? With snow swirling around it in a snow globe, and so it gets to some of that of sort of like an element situated in a larger context, and also kind of the sort of loneliness and kind of melancholy. The loneliness and sort of melancholy aspects, right? Like, I would say though that for me, like the snow globe gets at a sense of artificiality, not artificiality, a sense of constructedness, right?
Sure.
That this record deploys to greater effect, in my mind anyway, than the Mark Kozelek album, right? Like, Lonely This Christmas, I feel like there's irony, right? There's actually, I don't know if you noticed, but the You'll Be So Lonely This Christmas with No One to Hold, it's a blue note, right? Like, because the melody, I think, is You'll Be So Lonely This Christmas with No One to Hold, and it goes on from there. And let me see if I can do this, let me see if I can kind of make this distinction happen. On the Los Campesinos record, it's You'll Be So Lonely This Christmas with No One to Hold, right? And it's a blue note instead of a lowered third, or you know what I mean, or somewhere in the vicinity of a lowered third, because pitch is a continuum, not a, you know, not a binary on or off thing. And so there's this kind of like, there's this sort of slyness, that's coming across in the sort of construction of the songs, that is saying that like, that is saying in a way that I think is clever, that is sort of ironizing the misery of Christmas, right? It's sort of ironizing the sense of like loneliness and of isolation, and talking about the constructedness of that sense in a way that struck me as sort of sophisticated and very, very stimulating, rather than sort of wallowing, rather than just enacting the misery of Christmas. It's sort of the kind of the innate melancholy.
Rather than just sounding like a miserable person on Christmas.
Right. It's sort of saying like, oh, okay, like if we sound like a miserable person, like how do we construct the miserable person, right? Like let's anatomize, let's kind of delve into this idea. Let's really get into this idea of Christmas misery, and let's have some fun with our Christmas misery,
right? You know, right. Whereas, like Mark Kozelek, like the album is called "Sings Christmas Carols," right? Like again, I can't wait till Mark Kozelek goes to Panera Bread,
right? Exactly.
And yeah,
okay, that's all I wanted to say about Los Campesinos. You know that, and thanks for indulging me. I appreciate.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, we were going to do. There were multiple pathways, right? And I think though, you know, in some ways, I want to stay on the thing that we were going to pivot on, which is kind of, you know, the idea of a perpetual Christmas band. And there is something, you know, there are ways in which. The sound of Los Campesinos, right, who are kind of a large, indie, you know, kind of classical, large ensemble, early aughts indie pop band. And that there, you know, there are elements that they kind of are in a classical indie tradition that, you know, is kind of not as in vogue these days, right? That, you know, and you know they have a big sound that is reminiscent, but of a kind of lower fi Arcade Fire or of other kind of big ensembles, kind of like especially kind of the Canadian indie pop boom of the early aughts. You know, there's elements of Broken Social Scene, even though the songs are kind of less expansive and instrumental, but there's a sense of a lot of people playing very vigorously, and a kind of and we talked a little bit about this of when we were talking about punk and post-punk, and like specifically Blondie, where Blondie, you know, takes the wall of sound and synthesizes it. And then, you know, part of what was starting to happen in the early aughts with bands like the Arcade Fire and other bands is they take some of the sounds of new wave and of post-punk and that had used synthesizers and then disaggregate and reanalog them, and they get the, you know, they get the specialists in violins and the specialists in glockenspiels. You know, they cock their glockenspiel and fire it off. And there's something about that, and that's characteristic on all of Los Campesinos albums. A lot of the records are really worth checking out, especially some of the early ones. Hold on now, youngster, and We Are Beautiful, We Are Doomed, and Romance is Boring are all really worth checking out, because they have this, especially if you like large ensemble indie pop, there's multiple singers, there's a lot of instrumentalists, and there's a sense of everybody together having a good time. And in that way, all of the records have the elements of this Christmas sing-along jamboree. So there are elements that for them makes a Christmas record sound really natural. And so even though they're not even doing a kind of typical Christmas album, which is, the standards, a mix of standards and maybe a couple forgettable original songs, right? Like, who can name, like, without Googling, name an original Christmas song on the Boys to Men Christmas album? You can't do it. Silent Nights is the main attraction, right? And you know, and there are a lot of songs, there are obviously exceptions that prove the rule, right? There's the Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, which is kind of one of these, you know, relatively few songs on a Christmas album that is not a classic. And you know, it's not a standard that kind of enters the canon. But the Los Campesinos record is kind of different because it's a Los Campesinos record that happens to come out at Christmas in a way. And it indicates that they are one of the acting bands that is more in the in the Christmas space, right? That you know, they're a good contender for being a Christmas band in the manner of in the matter of Mannheim Steamroller, who is best known for their instrumental Christmas music, and for their albums of Christmas music. So I think that there is.
It's sort of natural. I mean, there is kind of a naturalness to how they come by the Christmas record, right? Like, It makes sense, you know, given that there are Los Campesinos records, right, and they have these qualities. Should there be a Los Campesinos Christmas record? Well, of course there should be. It makes perfect sense, right? That they have one.
Ask a similar question, and now complete the transition. Given the qualities of Diplo's music, should there be a Diplo Christmas album?
I don't know a ton about you. You're gonna have to hit me to Diplo a little bit, because I don't know a ton of like EDM and sort of producer driven electronic music.
Sure.
My main area of competence here.
I mean, the main thing to know about Diplo is, his earliest claim to fame was as a creative partner, originally a romantic and creative partner of MIAs, right? And so, it has a co-writing credit on Paper Planes and a lot of the early stuff. And so he was, and their creative partnership emerged as MIA was emerging in kind of 2004, 2005, 2006. And he was, working in a lot of spaces in electronic music, especially kind of, where electronic dance music met world music, and so was and is known for kind of exploring a lot of the electronic musics of Latin America, of very specific dance music cultures of America, various like American regions, so Baltimore club music, New Orleans sissy bounce, and a lot of like and then more recently dubstep and trap music and a variety of sub genres that emerge. And so he's kind of been in this, in this space of he was working in these spaces and modes, and that made a very natural partnership with
MIA.
With MIA. But then also, as they've parted ways, he's through the publicity and success of Paper Planes, has become a kind of major figure and curator and connector in the space. I mean, his other really well known project is Major Lazer, which is a dance hall, reggae dance hall, dubstep-ish project that he produces and brings in a variety of Jamaican and other Caribbean artists as singers, but then is placed under this the kind of image, the outward-facing image of this large military guy with a laser for a hand. Yeah. is the cartoon character of Major Lazer.
Uh-huh.
And Major Lazer is most known for I think one of the better known songs is Pon de Flor, which is the song that's sampled in Beyonce's Who Runs the World Girls song. And so, yeah, so that's kind of a very brief introduction to Diplo. And then this album, this EP, this mixtape is a compilation of artists kind of associated with his record label, Mad Decent, and of the Christmas songs associated with that. And this is the second, I think, I think last year or the year before, there was a very decent Christmas was released. And then this year's entry is a very, very decent Christmas. It has a lot of, and so that's kind of the background, for who Diplo is and, some of what's going on here.
Well, good. I appreciate that. God, we don't really do a lot of that, but maybe this is a service we could provide our listeners, is this sort of capsule, histories, because, it's literally impossible to keep up, literally. Sorry. I apologize for saying that word. It is, impossible. It feels impossible a lot of the time to keep up with, everything that's going on, even if you have an interest in a space. I don't know, something to think about. I sort of approach this from the kind of imaginative perspective that you were advocating with Mark Kozelek, and I said, well, where is this, right? Like, where is this Christmas music for? And for me, this was Christmas music that was for like a Christmas party at an art gallery or something. Mm-hmm. That where it was like, it was not a family gathering. This was almost like almost like official, almost more like state run Christmas music, right, for an official occasion, an official cultural occasion, rather than being like family Christmas music, right? And so it was like work holiday party, or
work holiday party for like a media company.
Yeah, if you're not right, exactly. If your work is making culture, this is your work holiday party music. And I sort of took it a lot of it as being sort of fun, right? As being sort of novelty music, right? Like, let's especially like the child's voice on the Little Drummer Boy.
Little Drummer Boy.
Like that it's sort of what I appreciated was like the sense of fun and sort of the sense of play, right? The sense of party. you know, over well,
and
above.
The sense of, like, you know, Christmas music, Christmas always already being ruined.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's another way of kind of, you know.
Or always already being ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, and that being the element, right? So, right. So this is like taking the evil tinsel trees in Charlie Brown and buying all of them, and just like and like lighting them with strobe lights, and then, you know, just like, you know, twerking till Santa comes, and then having him join.
Right, exactly. Terry Richardson will be playing Santa at this year's Christmas party. You know, come sit on Uncle Terry's lap. Right.
Yeah, and those are some of the more unpleasant sides, right? Like, there's the song by the artist known as Splurt, right, and the. His song hashtag OMW2SYG or On My Way to Steal Your Girl. Uh-huh. Like, you know, women are not property. They are not to be stolen. Splurt. So Splurt. Splurt sounds like it should be the name.
Yeah, but Splurt, I mean, you know what
Splurt,
I mean?
If Splurt, you like, I was supposed to say Splurt sounds like it should be the name of the rabbit on the cover of the album. Like, right? Does he sound like a cartoon character? Like, I'm Splurt!
But if you, right, if you are saying, like, if you are saying that, if you feel the need to get self-righteous about Splurt and, like, correct the political wrongs of Splurt, right? Splurt has already won, you know? It's Splurt's Christmas, and you're just living in it, right? And there is, like, yes, I agree, it's sort of juvenile and, like, politically not everything one would hope, right? Like, we might have a conversation with HR after this Christmas party, but you know, if you're it's Splurt's Christmas, we're just twerking in it, is I guess my point.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I mean, I think that, and in some ways, the song that's instructive is the Deck the Halls version, right, which is called Troll the Halls, right? And I think
that
there is...
Yeah, because this is another, right, this is another response that I think is a legitimate response to the sort of forced merriment and jollity of... you know, of Christmas stuff, right? Which is to alienate and confound, you mm-hmm. know, right? Yeah. Which is to like really is, which is to sort of thumb your nose at it and kind of make it ridiculous, right? Like to the sort of mandatory fun, speaking of Christmas, speaking of novelty music, right? Like, that mm-hmm. it is, I think, like a healthy and even in some sense progressive response to mandatory fun, you know, to make dick jokes.
Well, yeah, and to try to, it's like, you know, because you can always not make a Christmas album, right? that is, in fact, the default option is to not make a Christmas album, right? It's to, you know, to go through the ritual. And so that there is a trolling here, and that is and I think that, and that's really interesting, is that, you know, they're saying, like, hey, look at me. Look at me and check out me and Splurt coming down your chimney on our way to steal your girl. And I think that, I mean, it, for me, and I was going to talk about this earlier, part of what I like, what cracks me up about this is a lot of the same things that I like, that crack me up and that I ultimately like about the Mannheim Steamroller Christmas albums, because the Mannheim Steamroller Christmas albums are also really obnoxious, because they're very, I mean, they're all instrumental, and they're quite bombastic. And you know, on the one hand, they are, you know, very, you know, obviously there's precious little twerking on the Mannheim Steamroller records, or, you know, when one is listening to them, but that they're not also not appropriate for all settings, because it's very, it's almost inappropriately earnest. In a way, it's in a way that's almost unbecoming, right? That, you know, that That there is something about a lot of the you know, most popular, most played Christmas music that's very polished and kind of, it's very like, you know, oh, hey, happy holidays, you know, travel safely, great, see you, happy new year. You know, it's very pleasantries, right? There's a lot of pleasantries. And that Mannheim Steamroller is the person, you know, at the Christmas party that's drunk and hugging everyone, right? And it's just like, I love Christmas so much, and getting everyone a present, you know, beyond what is appropriate and the proportionality based on kind of status and social relationship, and that that Mannheim Steamroller like loses its cool, and I think that there is something about the losing its cool that is there in Mad Deason as well. Is even though there's a lot of posing as well, there's something about the primarily instrumental reinterpretations of these songs that I feel like is our generation's, or not our generation, is basically Mannheim Steamroller for millennials, right? and there's something that I like about that, and for this, and this is unabashedly openly novelty music, and the novelty has not yet worn off.
Sure.
And because
it is still sort of novel, right? Like in the literal sense of what novel means.
Right. Well, and it's just because like when you're listening to it, there's it's a kind of perpetual motion, novelty machine, because it's just like, I why does this exist? and yet it exists. Like a virgin birth, the Diplo Christmas album is a miracle. it is the greatest Christmas miracle of them all. And so even more than the religious songs, for me, the Diplo Christmas album, it encapsulates the miracle of the Christmas myth and the Christmas story, and it is the reason for the season.
We're not going to top that, I think.
Yeah. So let us know. Listen to these three albums. Let us know which of these made it onto your Christmas playlist, or for which Christmas playlists and which Christmas activities that you played. Or let us know what else is on your holiday playlist. Regardless of what holiday you are celebrating or not celebrating, what is your festive music, or what is your antidote to that? How are you seceding from that? Let us know on the show notes at overthinkingit.com. Tweet us at @TFTpodcast on Twitter. And as always, join the discussion on our Facebook page. So there's a lot of ways to kind of spread the cheer. And so whether you are in a somber, dimly lit room soundtracking your indie film with Mark Kozelek, being the Kozelekiest Kozelek in Kozelek Town, basically just grinching it out, or whether you are in the snow globe with Los Campesinos, or whether you are on your way to steal my girl with Splurt, just know that we hope that you have a very, very real holiday season.